So tonight, you might have noticed at the end of the meditation, a bit of a guided meditation with the word soul in it. You don't hear the word soul a lot in Buddhist gatherings. And it's too bad because it's a beautiful word. My sense is really that there's a universal awareness, and that the way that it emanates through each of us has its own particular kind of vibrational expression, and it's all, and that's the soul light. And that that little bit of that meditation of just sensing that, sensing the light of awareness, once we're relaxed enough and breathing it in and breathing out and letting ourselves just really feel the belonging to that, can be a beautiful part of practice. And it's a bit of what I'd like to talk about tonight, which is really how do we come to trust the awareness, the spirit, whether we call it soul, awareness, spirit, that it's here. It's right here. It's available. It's inside us now. And one of the classic stories that I have always been drawn to, I actually, even when I was practicing as a Sikh in an ashram, I heard it there, was of a musk deer that was very drawn by some ephemeral fragrance it smelled. And so it decided it was going to find the source of that fragrance and went across miles and miles of lands and mountains and waters and rivers to try to find the source of that scent. And it spent its whole life doing that, became very exhausted in the very end of its life as it collapsed, its horn pierced its belly. And as it lay dying, it realized that the scent it had been seeking was really coming from its own being. It's as good a story as any in reminding us that we have this habit that can take a lifetime or more that we play out of thinking that we're on our way to something, that what we want is out there, that it's down the road, that somehow or other we're not enough, it's not really here. We might subscribe to the spiritual philosophies that say that we all have Buddha nature and that it's in us, this radiance and love. But in terms of what's actually informing our moments, we're identified as a self where something's wrong, something's missing, we've got to get things done, things aren't quite okay. That's our deepest conditioning, are these beliefs. We have a very profound habit of sensing separateness, sensing self in here, other out there, sensing that we're incomplete, something that we've got to get done to be okay, that we're not there yet. And for many of us, the main way it presents, I talk about often, as our unworthiness, the trance of unworthiness, that we have lots we have to do until we'll be in the green. You remember that, I think I mentioned to some of you, the psychiatrist's office and the dog that's kind of complaining, saying, good dog, it's always good dog, why isn't it ever great dog, you know? And I thought that was kind of perfect because it's always the sense of this self here hasn't made it yet. And usually it's very deeply, a deep root in shame. It's like in one psychological journal of clinical psych, there was a man that's writing away in his journal and he's saying, dear diary, I'm sorry to bother you again, but, you know. So you get the idea. So we have this conditioning to move through the day in trance, and whether it's a deep trance of unworthiness or just that kind of ongoing veil that has this message of a self on his or her way, trying to get things done, trying to make it through the day, it's deep conditioning. And the moments of pleasantness and unpleasantness keep tripping it off. So whenever we're feeling some sort of something's pleasant going on, there's some coagulating around it and wanting to hold on to it, wanting to make it more. And we pursue it with our thoughts and our plans, and there's a grasping. And when there's moments of unpleasantness in our body, anxiety, something happens interpersonally, again, we contract, we coagulate, and in some way, we're planning, we're worrying, we're pushing away, we get busy in that way. The Buddha in one famous sutta describes it like we're children in this burning house and we're just playing and not realizing the house is burning. And really the message is we're in a trance. This life is short. Every one of us is going to die. Yet we're passing our moments in this trance of a separate self that's incomplete. And the invitation is, it's not as much like get out of a burning house as can we deepen our attention and discover that light, that soul light, that fullness, that sense of wholeness or home, being home, here and now. Can we wake up from the trance? I like this little phrase. It's from the Sutta of the Holy Buddha. Until you reach the path, you wander in the world with the precious Buddha, completely wrapped up inside as in a bundle of rags. You have this precious Buddha. Unwrap it quickly. So how to unwrap? Last week we spent the evening talking about how one of the primary pathways of unwrapping, of cutting through our conditioning, and this is a pathway that whether you're at the beginning, middle, or end of the path, you just keep coming back to, is to arrive in this embodied presence. Just to, even right now, as you hear the words, just to take a breath and feel the life of the body. That in the moments that we're able to step out of our ideas and conceptualizations and feel the life of the body right here and now, we begin to cut through that conditioning, all those ideas of a self that's incomplete, that something's missing, that something's wrong. So I'd like to expand on that tonight. I'd like to continue to explore how do we break through that trance of separateness and begin to really trust and inhabit the soul light, the awareness that's right here. How do we unwrap the precious Buddha? This is Zen Master Dogen. The human mind has absolute freedom as its true nature. There are thousands upon thousands of students who have practiced meditation and obtained this realization. Do not doubt the possibilities because of the simplicity of the method. If you can't find the truth where you are, where else do you expect to find it? So this is the message that you get from all the teachers and all the traditions in some way, that right now is the time, the place is here, the attention, can we just pay attention to what's happening right now inside us? And what we do as we begin to do that, and you'll notice this in any sitting, it's kind of across the board, is as soon as we start to begin to have that intention, we get pulled off. The habit of mind is to get pulled off. And we go off into our plans and our comments and our worries. And it's as if our deepest conditioning is to think whatever it is we want, it's not right here. Have you noticed how hard it is to just arrive in the stream of here, right now? So there's a mistrust. In some way, we don't trust, as just like the musk deer, we don't trust that what we long for we'll find if we really let go of all the thinking and the grasping and the judgments and the ideas and just arrive here. We don't trust it. So I'd like to tell you a story about trusting that that I found really powerful. And I found it in a book called The Soul of Money, written by Lynn Twist, who's a friend of a Sangha member's, Harriet's here, and is a wonderful woman. She's a global activist and helps to raise monies and for really wonderful causes. And her teachings are really powerful, and they're really teachings about she's been really inspired by Indigenous people who live with what she calls a sense of sufficiency. And for her, sufficiency means enough. So these are Indigenous people that have this Dharma, this truth of knowing that it's already here. What we long for is already here. And that there's this instinctive wisdom of living with equanimity and living with freedom in whatever life circumstances. Because trusting enough. It's like right now is enough. So one of the stories that she tells in her book is about an experience in Senegal when she was traveling around. She runs this hunger project, and she helps to bring monies in partnership with Indigenous people and does it in really wise and creative ways. And in this particular story, she describes driving hours into this desert that's incredibly barren, bleak, seemingly hostile land. I mean, really, really brutally hot and windless. And she finally, they arrive at what looks like maybe two trees. And as they get closer, they find that 120 people are gathered in the precious shade of these two trees. And the women are dancing and drumming, and as they get out of their vehicle, she's brought into it. So her first welcome by this tribe that she's visiting is the women draw her into this dancing, and they're all dressed colorfully and drumming and cheerful, and the kids are running around, and that's the beginning of this celebration. And then the meeting begins, because she's been called in because this tribe is in dire circumstances. And the chiefs run the meeting. It's all run by the men. The women sit behind in another circle behind, just listening. So the chiefs are running the meeting, and they basically tell her that their wells are running dry, as are the wells of other villages and communities all in that area, and that they don't know if they can make it through the next season, that they can't grow anything, they can't drink anything. They're just afraid that they're going to have to move and leave their sacred lands. So what she does is, after she hears that, she then says, "Well, I'd like to also talk to the women." And so the women have a circle. And when she meets with the women share with her that they've had these dreams and visions of a great underground lake that's right under them. And that their wells haven't been dug deep enough, but if they could dig them deeper, they'd find this lake. And they've had visions of it, and they're absolutely confident about it. And yet, the men have not permitted them to do it because they didn't believe them, A, and B, it wasn't considered right for women to do the digging. It was against tribal custom. So Lynn goes back and meets with everyone, and she basically senses that the women, the confidence of the women, it's that there's something real there. So she convinces the tribe that they're going to put money in and help, you know, provide basic equipment and to support the women in digging. And so the elders agree. And for the next year and a half, the women start digging. And they support each other. It's done with also, again, drumming and singing, and they take care of each other's children, and it's what they're doing. And as it turns out, they never doubted that the water was there. And after all that effort, they found, in fact, there was a great underground lake that was there. And it was the lake of their visions. So since then, the men and women of the tribe have built pumping systems and a tower for storage, and now 17 villages in that area are able to draw from the water, and it's been transformed. I mean, they have irrigation and chicken farming and literacy classes and a batiking business, and the women are now a respected part of the tribe, and the tribe is very proud that they were able to draw on their own personal resources to prosper. It wasn't like they got a handout. Now, what I love about this story, although it seems like women are right and good and men are stupid and bad, it's not really, that's not the story. I mean, certainly there's a strong cultural, we're running into strong cultural tradition that many people are realizing is in need of deep change. I think of it more archetypally, that there is a place in us that intuits freedom, that intuits our possibility of really loving without holding back, of really living in a way where we can be real with each other, and of really living from the deepest part of our own being. It's like we all long for that. I think more than anything else, there's the despair of feeling like we're racing across the surface and not really arriving in our lives. And we long to live from the depths of our wisdom in our heart, to live from that. And so this is really a story of trusting that possibility, that depth is there. And that if we dig, if we pay attention, we can touch into it. And it's a story of doing that together. That it's not like we're all going off into our own cave so that we can dig by ourselves and find some precious thing inside a self. It's that we're together in this process of looking and waking up. That together we're unwrapping this precious Buddha. So then the question really comes, you know, if we want to look deeper, is what are the practices that help us to trust what's here? I think we really suffer from not trusting. When I work with people and we really get down to it, you know, what's going on, there's a mistrust. There's a mistrust that the goodness, that the love, that the awareness is right here. If we trusted it, we'd be fine. So the first step that the Buddha pointed out, and we come back to again and again in the Noble Truths, is to just honestly recognize the trance, the suffering that we're in. Not to make ourselves crazy and say, oh my God, I'm just my whole life, I'm living in this kind of trippiness of being neurotic and judgmental and this and that. It's not about adding another judgment. It's more this honesty of saying, okay, today, what was it like really? And you might check in. I like to do this often. You might just close your eyes and say, okay, today. You know, can I look at the trance of today? Can I look at how much there was a sense of living in that kind of busy cocoon of thoughts, of leaning forward and obsessing, of feeling in some way imposed on, of feeling like we are in some way oppressed or burdened, of feeling a sense of too much or trying to get through the day? Can we look at today and sense how much of that trance of blaming we were in, of somebody else is wrong? Or maybe it was self-blame, that I'm blowing it. This is the bundle of rags, and it's our conditioning, and it's universal. So if you're feeling particularly neurotic and like you really... everybody else kind of might have been okay today, but you really were caught up. We all are living in that to some degree. And the beginning of being able to sense, there are these pure sacred waters, this awareness, is to just recognize without added judgment, okay, the trance. So the Buddha started that way. He said, suffering exists. We all get caught. The cause is this deep tendency to hold on, to resist. But then he said, and the third noble truth, and this is, you know, if we miss out on the third noble truth, we miss out on all the goodies, which is freedom is possible. We can learn to trust the sacred waters of pure awareness, that precious Buddha nature. So then we sense, okay, so how do we practice right now in our lives, you know, so that more and more moments, there's a kind of remembering. And it's really what we're doing in here when we, you know, come to our breath and we say, okay, when the stories come, when the thoughts come, when the judgments come, can we notice them and come back right here and feel what's actually going on? What is it really like right now? So again, I invite that right now for you, just to take a few breaths and just check in, to say, okay, you've been thinking, you've been following this talk some. What does it mean to really be here, right here? Let your body be the anchor. Feel your hands. Feel your breath. The senses awake. So the sounds move through you. Coming and going. Just know that you're still here, right here. So we practice taking refuge in the moment-to-moment experience. Right here. Now, you can continue if you like, but just to say that as soon as things get difficult, it becomes very difficult to get out of our ideas and our thinking. We try to think our way out of trouble, always. That's what humans do. We try to think our way out of trouble. Somebody sent me this little story a couple of years ago, which I think really says it. There was a magician working on a cruise ship. He had a parrot that was always ruining his act, saying in the middle of the trick, "The card is up his sleeve," or "he has a dove in his pocket," or "he slipped it through the hole in his hat." One day, the ship sank. The parrot and the magician found themselves together on a life raft. For several days, the parrot sat silently and grimly, just staring at the magician. On the fourth day, the parrot said, "Okay, I give up. What did you do with the ship?" Probably the most basic practice in meditation is to wake up out of our ideas about what's going on and directly connect with life as it is. I consider this if the one way of looking at our training to really wake up out of the trance and begin to trust awareness, that one domain is, if you think of it as an ocean and waves, that our being is an ocean and these waves are coming and going, waves of thoughts, waves of feeling, waves of sensation, that one pathway is absolutely, wholeheartedly, courageously feeling the waves as they come and go. In other words, rather than being lost in our ideas, we just keep on coming back and feeling the waves. The challenge, as I mentioned, is that it gets really seductive. So the practice is on the cushion, and it's a deep kind of listening. It's a willingness when we get pulled away to keep on asking that question, what is happening inside me? Can I be with this? These are, to me, this is the basic inquiry that keeps us coming home, that keeps allowing us to touch those waters. What is happening? Can I be with this? I use the word listening because a listening attention means that we're intimate and close in, but it's not like that becomes who we are. We don't become the fear. It's just a wave in our awareness. Somebody, a friend of mine who's very involved with the project to save the coral reefs, described, I'd never heard about this, how on the coral reefs, these little fish, after they're born, they go out into the open sea miles and miles and miles and miles away from the reef that they're born on. And they need to get away from predators so they can get big enough and strong enough to then come back to the reef. Meanwhile, the way they find their way back, as they come back to the reef they were born in, is that each reef is slightly different shape, and the way the waters move against the reef creates a different vibration in the sea. And they actually detect the vibration of their particular reef because of its shape and formation in the sea. And they listen to that in their own way. They're feeling their way back home by listening. I thought that was amazing. They can go out hundreds of miles and find their way back to a reef by listening to the vibration of the current against their particular reef as opposed to other reefs. Doesn't that blow you away? I think that's amazing. In a way, that is the kind of deep listening that takes us home. That if we just commit ourselves to training ourselves to listen. And when I say listen, the word vipassana means to see clearly, to listen deeply, to feel fully. If we can train ourselves to step out of our thoughts and to just pay attention in that deep, caring way to what's happening, we find our way home to those sacred waters of awareness. We find our way home. So what makes it possible, as in the story that Lynn Twist told, was that we have a sense that we're not doing it all by ourselves. I think part of what ends up reconsolidating a sense of where it's too much, we can't get there, and so on, is we have a sense of a self doing a spiritual practice and having to accomplish something. And the truth is a sense of belonging, that we are doing it as a collective of beings awakening together. And there's a real deep sense of both emptiness, like it's not so personal, and belonging that comes with that. Mary Oliver wrote these words. She says, "And then the wind, not thinking of you, just passes by, touching the ant, the mosquito, the leaf, and you know what else. How blue is the sea, how blue is the sky, how blue and tiny and redeemable everything is, even you." So we practice without a sense of a personal self-practicing, but a sense of this is awareness waking up to realize itself. And the training is a deep listening, moment to moment, coming back. We practice on the cushion, noticing we've been thinking, coming back, meeting whatever's here, whatever waves, with as much kindness as possible. And we practice in daily life. It really helps to sense in your day how you can let this body, this heart, be a place to come home to again and again. It really helps with whatever you're doing, just do that. I mean, can we wash the dishes and just be washing the dishes? Or can we walk outside to get the mail and really feel ourselves walking? You know, can we breathe and just feel the breath? That's one of the great Zen teachings, is just do one thing at a time. It helps you to come home to the moment. And of course, there's one of my favorite stories of one of the Zen monasteries is how one student came into the kitchen where one of the monks was eating, and he saw his Roshi eating his breakfast and reading the newspaper at the same time. And so he, you know, kind of confronted him, and he said, you know, I thought you told us one thing at a time. And his Roshi said, I did. You know, when you eat and read, just eat and read, you know. So I mentioned that there's two different pathways of ways that we pay attention. And one of them we train on the cushion here, which is to notice what's going on, what's happening, and to be with it, to feel the waves of experience over and over, just to let go of thoughts right now, this body, this place. The second way is actually to look towards the awareness itself. Dreaming of the lake. They had to dig, they had to pay attention, we have to go through our moment-to-moment experience. But when things calm down, we can actually call on the awareness itself. Just like that, the words of that I read you of John O'Donohue, where he says, just to sense the soul light. That's a little different than saying be with whatever's here, isn't it? Do you see the difference? In one, we're being with the moment-to-moment experience. In the other, we're calling on the awareness that we might not be feeling connected to, but is there. And by calling on it, invoking it, sensing it, we actually come home to it. Sri Narsargadatta says, you are really in search of yourself without knowing it. You are love longing for the love-worthy, the perfectly lovable. Due to ignorance, you are looking for it in the world of opposites and contradictions. When you find it within, your search will be over. So this is another way of finding, of unwrapping the Buddha in rags. That one way is, what is happening right now? Can I be with this? And another way is awareness itself. Can we begin to sense, tune into, and touch awareness itself? So right now as you sit, just so these aren't words that sound far off, we'll just explore the difference between paying attention to the waves and the ocean, knowing that the waves are made of ocean, and ocean takes shape in waves. But let's just explore a little together, okay? So just to close your eyes. And sense what it means to come home into this moment right now. You might feel the half smile as a way of just gentling in. You might consciously relax in the areas that habitually clench, relaxing the jaw, softening the eyes, letting the shoulders relax. Let the hands be soft. And we begin by opening to what I call the waves of experience, which is the actual changing stream of sensation, of feelings. Let your intention be to meet what's here, saying yes. Just letting it be, wakefully. If the mind seems spacey, you might even inquire, what is happening inside me right now? You might bring the attention right to the throat or the chest, to the belly. Feel the life breath inside you. See how much you can meet your experience with a relaxed attention, so that whatever's happening, relax with it. Just letting this life live through you. You might sense the experiences that are arising, sensations, emotions, as waves in the ocean of being. Waves arising in awareness. And just now turn the attention to the awareness itself. Just sense the nature or quality of awareness. That which is aware of these feelings, of these sensations. Just to gently look back into awareness itself. What's it like? And without any cognitive inquiry, just relax and feel it, experience it, inhabit it. Awareness has been described as being knowing, just knowing, and yet empty knowing, not a self-knowing, just knowing happening. So there's a wakefulness. Rest in that. Just the knowing. Awareness is open. There's no edge or boundary to that knowing. Like a mirror, awareness reflects with clarity all that arises. And yet it's stainless. Nothing leaves a trace. Nothing hurts or contracts it. Open, empty, awake. Sri Ramakrishna writes, O longing mind, dwell within the depth of your own pure nature. Do not seek your home elsewhere. Your naked awareness alone, O mind, is the inexhaustible abundance for which you long so desperately. Just relaxing right now. You can breathe in that light of awareness, feeling it fill you. And breathe out and just become it. Open, empty, awake, tender towards whatever arises. We'll close this meditation we're doing with what the Tibetans call the four rememberings. which help us to trust the pure waters of awareness, to remember them and trust them. The Tibetans say that this wakefulness, this openness, this luminosity of our mind and heart is closer than imagined. So this is the beginning, closer than imagined, just as the women in Senegal realize it's right here, right under us, within us. So just sense that this awareness, this pure nature, is closer than imagined, right here. The second of the rememberings is that it's more profound. It's beyond any idea, any conception. Just to let go of thoughts completely and discover the living reality right here. Closer than imagined, more profound. The third remembering is that it's easier than we think. That it's a matter of relaxing into. So just give yourself that gift of letting go. Letting go into what's already here. And the last of the rememberings is that it's more wondrous than we imagine. That there's a beauty and a mystery that is more than we even could possibly be thinking of when we relax and open. It's as Shantideva writes, he says, as a blind man feels when he finds a pearl in a dustbin, so am I amazed by the miracle of awakening rising in my consciousness. So am I amazed by the miracle of awakening rising in my consciousness. So awareness, this radiance, this love that is our essence, is closer than we can imagine. It's here, right here. It's more profound. It's beyond any thought or idea. Easier, we relax into it. And more wondrous. To trust this awareness is the ultimate refuge. It's the refuge that's big enough for all living and dying. To know this is true, this is who we are. This is our home. So we can close together with the metta, the prayer that these moments of practicing and reflecting together might ripple out and be of benefit to all beings everywhere, that each and all beings might realize the luminosity, the love of our nature, that we might awaken together, that realize our togetherness and realize the refuge of awareness, realize that freedom. May all beings be happy. May all beings such natural and great peace. May all beings be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington, to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.